We're doing our best too to just work on top of funnel and bringing more people in and being online and just attending different events and just trying to really expand out, because as we get into bigger deals, like find the deal and you got to find the money. Those are the two biggest activities that take place in a syndication.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What's going on, everybody? You know the drill. Every Monday, we're coming at you all things multifamily and real estate investing. And today, we've got a great guest. I know I say that all the time, but we had a really good conversation. It shows you the power of social media. There's a lot of cons to social media, but there's also some pros to it as well. And our guest, Brock, and I met via social media. He put up a post, slid into those DMs. You know how it is. We corresponded, went back and forth, and I got him on the show. And we had a great conversation. Brock Mogensen's his name. He's based out of Milwaukee, but he came to us live from Miami. Just shows you the power of real estate and the type of life that it can create. So Brock said he started about 5 years ago in the business, house hacked, and then eventually it led to his first syndication of, I think he said it was 86 units, something around there. And then from there, it's just exploded. He's done different asset classes, storage, industrial, and we jump into industrial and talk a good amount of it on the show. But the point is, 5 years in, he's been able to create a life where now, for the past 2 months, he's been in Miami. He left the cold winters of Milwaukee and he's been in Miami just enjoying it. And he says he plans on doing that for the coming years. It just shows the type of life you can create. So we have a really good conversation where he started, how he got to where he is today, talk about the different asset classes he's in. It was just all around great conversation of, you know, what's possible. All right, guys. So I just want to do a little housekeeping right before I bring him on. But as you all know, the way I'm able to get like cool guests like this, continue to make the podcast, is by getting it in front of more ears and eyes. And the way to do that is by either you awesome listeners sharing it with a friend or family member that you think can get value out of this. Also, it's by leaving a rating or review on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, because that helps with the algorithm to get in front of more people, on YouTube, which I know some of you watch and listen there, because you tell me, definitely hit subscribe and a like on the video. And as always, thank you for all my listeners. I appreciate it. Again, I see the numbers rising every month. It just makes it awesome to know that people are actually listening, because I want to create this to provide value to people, to help people reach their goals, because I think that's one of the greatest feelings in the world, is to help others, right? Especially help others achieve what they want the most. So without further ado, here's Brock. Hey, Brock, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Sean.
Hey, man. No, thank you. This guy's coming to us from sunny Miami. He's taken time out of a beautiful place to come and share his wisdom. So one, thank you for that. And two, let's just get right into it, Brock. Let's tell everyone your story. What's your origin story, and how are you able to spend, I think you said a few months in Miami. How are you able to do that?
Taking some time, for sure. I was able to make it happen this year, and it's been awesome. But so yeah, I started real estate about 5 years ago. And really, it started, even going beyond that, it started growing up. My dad owned two duplexes. Both my parents were blue-collar jobs. Mom was a teacher. My dad drove a truck. And I saw what just owning four units could do for lifestyle, right? Like having that extra cash flow could get you the pool in the backyard, right? Like get you a couple of vacations a year. So growing up, I kind of saw that and I knew owning some real estate was something I had to do. So never like a big vision of I'm going to go big in real estate. It was just, let me try to buy a few duplexes throughout my life. So I go to college, right? Come back. My first job out of college is working in a call center, making like 40 grand a year, but I had the goal to start saving up money. So I started saving up money to buy a duplex, did that. It took me a year and a half to save up 10 grand. And then I bought a duplex, did the house hack model, living on the lower unit. I got two roommates. I got a tenant upstairs. I'm making like $500 a month and I'm living for free. And like, that was after the first month. I'm like, this is amazing. Like, this is the business to be in, real estate. So knew I wanted to do more in there. I wanted to go bigger in real estate. So I started researching all these avenues, the flipping, wholesaling, buying more duplexes, tried a few of those, just didn't have much luck. And then I came across this concept of syndication. And it really clicked with me as I saw it. I was having a mindset shift of like just wanting to go bigger. I saw that as a path to go bigger quicker. So went all in on that model, studied it. Fast forward 6 months, I ended up finding a partner. We start looking for these apartment buildings. We find this 89 unit deal. I ended up bringing another one of his other buddies in. Us three come together, syndicate it, and we closed it. So about a year after buying that duplex, we syndicated 89 units and then just kept doing that model, right? Did a few more. About a year and a half after that, was able to leave my job, go full-time into real estate. And then since then, it's just been continuing to follow that model and buy more properties. And it's gotten to a point where it's a sustainable business and we're really trying to grow it at this point.
Love it, man. So I feel like a stumbling block for a lot of people is they'll come to the epiphany of you, like they discovered syndication, but then it's like analysis paralysis. Where do I start? How much do I need to know? Or who do I need to know before I even start? So like what kind of got you over that? And what was that next step to proceed?
You're totally right. It's scary, right? Like looking at all the moving pieces of raising a whole bunch of money and getting the bank to sign off on it, finding the property. So I think for me, my strategy was to just really focus on one piece of the process. You could say there's five or six different pieces that make up a syndication. So instead of like trying to become an expert in all of these before I went out and did it, I decided, let me just get really good at one piece. And then I'm going to find the partners that are good at the other pieces. So for me, it was underwriting. I spent a lot of time learning how to analyze deals, underwriting, and became strong in there. That was kind of my value add component to the partnership. The other guys had some connections to capital, already had a decent portfolio that we could use as a track record. They were going to qualify for the loan with their balance sheet. So that was my path then, was just get really good at one piece. Everyone has a skill set in one, right? Like maybe you have family members or a close community that has a whole bunch of money and you can raise capital, or you're really good at making relationships and finding deals, or you got property management experience. All those different things can be leveraged to go out and create a partnership team to buy these properties. So that was kind of my model and angle on it.
Yeah, that's what this business is about, man. That's what I've come to realize. It's a team sport. No one's good at everything, and you shouldn't try to be good at everything either, because there's always going to be someone that is better at one aspect of it than you are. So that's kind of the same thing with me. I started off alone, but once I brought my partner in, and then everything just exploded because, well, one, I had more time to focus on the stuff I was good at and get really good at it, but he could fill in the areas that I wasn't that great at. And yeah, it just exploded, and it's been onward and upward since then. In terms of like education, I feel like people get stuck on that part. And what I am thankful I did is I sought someone out who was doing what I wanted to do, living the life that I wanted one day. I want to, like, in a professional and like valuable way, like latch on to this person, provide them value, but also learn instead of trying to just cram podcasts. And I did do that too, but like instead of just podcast books, did you go that route? Did you find a mentor or any type of like training?
Yes, I did. And I started with, like you said, I think the best place to start, you don't have to go right into like dropping. It's usually a pretty big investment to hire a mentor, right? But I think you start with the podcasts and books, right? Like listening to a podcast like this, go out and order. There's so many great real estate books out there. Order a handful of books, consume podcasts daily, and just do that for 6 months. And it's like, you can get so far just with that. You'll get the base knowledge of it. And you'll kind of figure out what you want to do, what your angle is going to be. And then from there, go out and start paying for the courses, hire a mentor if you really want to go all in. And if you just follow that blueprint, it's like within a year, you can go from just not knowing much, right, to like becoming pretty knowledgeable in this space.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll tell you, if you get the right mentor, they'll tell you what not to do because they've probably made that mistake. So that's worth the money, in my opinion. And listeners, everybody, I mention this on the show all the time, like do your due diligence, vet these people. There's a lot of people that are just trying to make a quick buck and are not going to have the information that's going to help you. So just make sure you're getting the real deal. All right, Brock. So first big deal, 86 units, multifamily. What does your business look like now?
So now we're actually went pretty wide. We took a little bit of a different angle. And I won't even say at the beginning it was on purpose. We started seeing these properties and other asset classes come up through, most of them were actually off market. We connected with the owners one way or the other. And so we did an office deal, which that deal sucks. That one deal in the portfolio I don't like. And then we did a strip mall deal. We did industrial, self-storage, mixed use. So we started quickly, got like wide on all these deals we were doing. And I think, not that I recommend that model, I think it does make sense to start off with your niche and focus on it. Like I said, it kind of happened by accident. But now that we've been in all these asset classes, we've gained the experience, we understand how to underwrite these deals, operate them. We've been able to have a wider net of deal flow and look at several different asset classes. So we're still looking at multifamily, doing those deals, really bullish on industrial right now. That's our main target, I would say, but self-storage. I mean, so we're working on a model now where we're looking at several asset classes coming in, and it's really increased our deal flow and allowed us to do more.
Nice. Yeah. It's all about that top funnel of deal flow. It's a numbers game. But tell us about the industrial. Like I mentioned earlier, we really haven't anyone come on the show and talk much about that. Why industrial? And obviously, how is it different than multi?
There's definitely the core fundamentals are the same, right? It's about the NOI. How do you get the NOI higher? There's obviously some big differences in the leases. So with industrial generally, right? It can be a single tenant deal. It could be a few tenants, but for the most part, you're not going to have 100 different tenants like you would an apartment. So it's really doing the due diligence on the lease in place and figuring out how you're going to optimize that and add value. So you can come to an industrial deal where there's 10 years left in the lease and it's a low cap rate. And it's pretty much, those are really turnkey deals, right? You're just going to come in and kind of ride the cash flow for 10 years and really not have to do much. Really easy to operate. Where the deals we're looking at are more like shorter term leases or even like sale leaseback deals where there might be 2 or 3 years left on the lease. And at that point, we're going to increase the rents or we're going to find a new tenant at a higher rent and flip that into a longer term lease that adds value to the property. Because the property value in industrial is really tied to how much years are left on the lease. If you got 10 years left on the lease, it's going to be more than a deal that has 2 years left on the lease. So that's really kind of the value add play within industrial, but can be more risk, right? Biggest difference in it is with multifamily, it's easier to lease an apartment building than it is 100,000 square foot at warehouse, right? Where an apartment building, you can model out your vacancy pretty conservatively, right? You use 5-8% vacancy as a blanket number. You're pretty safe, right? As long as there's demand in that market, you're pretty safe there. From my phone, right? I could post some pictures and put an ad out there and probably get an apartment leased within a few weeks. With industrial, there's more of a question mark around if that building goes vacant, are you going to lease it in 3 months? Are you going to lease it in a year? What if it sits vacant for 2 years? Then you're really in trouble, right? So there's kind of, but if you can lease it quick, now all of a sudden there's a whole bunch of value just created and it's big value creator. That's just one lever you pulled and not multiple levers you're pulling in multifamily. So there's some differences for sure. I think we're really drawn to it just because of the market we're operating in. There's a lot of the Rust Belt, right? We're in the Midwest, Milwaukee. There's a lot of demand for industrial. The fundamentals behind industrial in our market are really strong. So that's really drawn us over towards that asset class.
Yeah, that is a good key difference too, is like we're multi, you're underwriting the operations and the property itself, whereas industrial or retail, it's your like triple net stuff, you're underwriting the quality of the tenant. I actually have a buddy who does very good at this. It's a national retailer and he goes in, finds locations that have 1 to 2 years left on the lease so he can buy it at a good value. And he has a contact with this national retail, like corporate, and he gets them to renew it for 5 to 10 years and then he just sells it because it's worth more. So there definitely, there's a big game there because to what Brock said, the value is in that lease, not just the length, but the credit quality of the tenant as well.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think operationally, it's just, it's easier operationally for sure. Like your buddy, right? Like he calls, gets that tenant in there, right? Does the lease work. It's a couple of weeks, it's a lot of work. But like after you lock that up, it's like, all right, 5, 7, 10 years, you just kind of sit back. But on the other hand, everyone's had a big vacant retail center in their hometown that they've driven past for the past 5 years. Yeah. And that's scary. Like imagine owning that, like still paying property taxes. There's probably debt on it. There's still expenses coming in. There's no money coming in. There's definitely risk reward in the asset class, but I think it's, I like the triple net space, but it's all about what your goal is and what you're trying to do.
Yeah, for sure. And to your point too, like the world has changed, especially since pandemic, like people are shipping stuff more than ever. So there is a huge need for industrial. I think that and multifamily were kind of the two darlings of real estate over the past 3 years. So how is the industrial industry with like competition? As you know, with multifamily, it's just insane. The amount of people that are still, you know, it's calmed down since we, you know, we've seen stuff kind of debt dry up, but it's, they're still insane with the competition of offers on deals. Is it same in industrial?
It's still super competitive. Yeah, I think like most asset classes, but I think I would say very slightly less competitive. There's not quite as many people out there doing industrial as multifamily. There's a lot of the syndication models, obviously nothing new. It's becoming even more popular. There's a ton of people out there trying to syndicate multifamily. People are syndicating industrial too, but it's a little less common. So I think in the deal size we're operating into, it's kind of bigger than the individual user and too small for the institutional. So we're kind of in a little bit of a niche sweet spot where we see some deals that aren't too competitive, but still competitive. And we're having to really put our best foot forward on trying to find deals.
Yeah. And finding those deals, you mentioned off market, is that the main way or brokers too? How are you finding your deals?
Most of our deals are through brokers. We try to obviously get in on it off market to the brokers, to the relationships we have. So we have a few brokers that we've worked with a lot and know well, and we get a lot of first looks at deals. And we are actually right in the middle of like implementing kind of direct to owner marketing campaign and building that out to our deal flow. But for the most part, these bigger deals, the direct owner marketing campaigns do work, a lot of shit ton of work, right? But like, I think you really hammer brokers and commercial, like that's going to be your easiest route to deals.
I agree. Maybe it's not similar, but I know in multifamily, it's like 90, 5%+ of deals are done through brokers. So obviously, if you get an off-market deal, you can make a killing too. But if you want to do quantity and you want to scale, you have to go through brokers, right? Mm-hmm. And some of these even quasi off-market stuff is through a broker too. So I guess to tell the listeners, you know, I talk about this occasionally, but to me, this is probably one of the most important aspects of the business is building relationships with brokers, maintain those relationships. Are you doing that or your partner doing that? And if you don't mind sharing, like what is some of the strategy you use to build those relationships?
So we all do for sure. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the strategy behind it is first, you got to connect with them, right? You got to have your elevator pitch and then initial conversation. Why are you going to close the property, right? Like, how are you qualified to do this deal? What's your experience? If you don't have experience, who are you bringing in to do the experience? At the end of the day, the broker, maybe some of them are nice and want to help you out, but pretty much are just in it. They want their commission, right? When they get on the phone with you, they're just looking for, how is this person, if I send them this deal, how are they going to close it? And I want to make sure they're going to close it and not back out.
They're worth my time.
Yeah. You know, they can't get financing or something. So you got to sell the broker quick on that. But then standard rapport building stuff. Like I try to get a face-to-face with them when I first meet them and then just stay in touch. Shoot them a text, shoot them an email, give them a call, just check in. Hey, I just want to see if you got any deals coming up, just to remind you, like, we're looking for this kind of deal in this location, and just always stay on top of mind, because brokers are getting calls, messages 24/7 from buyers when they get a deal, right? Like the general process of a broker, usually, not always, but normally they get a deal, right? They get a listing contract with the seller. Normally what they do is they call or they send an email to the first couple people that are on the top of their mind, right? Most of the time it's people they've already closed deals with because they know that person can close. But if you just called that broker the other day and were like, hey, they think of you, they're going to give you that first look at it before they, this next step is they blast it out to their email list, right? Which some of these people have thousands of people on their list. And then it's a whole nother, it's much more competitive when you're going against 1,000 people. So the goal, like I always look at it is, I want to get into their top five. I look at it as like MySpace, you had like your top five on there.
Top eight,
whatever it is, right? Like I want to get in there. So I'm the first five people, first eight people, right, that they call when they get that new deal and listing.
Yeah, man, I can't stress this enough when I talk to people is the in-person meeting is so huge. Like early in my career, I flew down to Tampa because that was one of our original target markets. Flew from Boston and had a great meeting with the broker. And like, we're getting to close up. He's like, so what brought you into town this weekend? He must have just thought I was in to do something else. And I was like, I'll just use this time to go meet this guy. I was like, no, man, I flew down to meet you. I get back on a plane tonight and go back. And he was just like, blown away. And ever since then, he would send me deals. Like I didn't even really build that much rapport, but that was like enough. And he was sending me deals like right out of the gate. And he's like, oh man, why didn't you tell me? If I had known, we would have gone and looked at a couple of deals today. And I'm like, hey man, next time. So I can't stress it enough, man. And they also just want to have friends too, right? Like I'm sure you see this. They just want to like talk to people that they like. They want to do business with people they like talking to, like hanging out with. So at the end of the day, man, we all just want to have a good time and not deal with assholes.
Exactly. And I love that story. Go on the extra mile, right? Instead of just like giving them a quick phone call or like sending them a quick email and thinking like, okay, I did my job. Now I'm going to get deals. Like they might just copy and paste your email address into their CRM and like you're on that list. But
yeah, but they can't put a face to that email or that name, right?
Exactly. Real estate's all about relationships, right? It's like anything else. You're building that relationship and it could take some time, right? Like you might have to get to know this person for 6-12 months, but it'll pay off finally when you get that first look at the deal.
100%. Yeah. To your point, once you close too, like, and what I tell people is make your process from due diligence, escrow to close as smooth as possible. Obviously try never to retrade. Obviously sometimes there's some huge items where you just can't help it, but try to never retrade because once you close with them and it's easy, like, cause I've heard stories where people have closed with a broker, but they're a pain. So the broker will try not to like have to do a deal with them again. So it's not just about closing. It's about an ease of close. Like the first deal I did with this specific broker I'm thinking of, he called me afterwards and like thanked me, like profusely thanked me like for making it so easy. You guys are so great to work with. At the end of the day, they're just there to make a commission. They don't want to work hard, like more or less, they're going to choose less for the same commission, right? So that just struck me. And that's something I like harp on is just make it easy for them. And then another point, like same broker, after he closed, shortly after the Braves won the World Series, and he recently had a kid, I sent him a Braves onesie and thanked him for like choosing us and working with us. Like a few months later, once it fit the kid, he like out of the blue, he sent me a picture of his kid wearing it. You know, it's just,
that's awesome. I love that.
That's what it's about though, man, right? Like we're doing business. I don't want to just, obviously I'm in business to make money for my investors and myself and really feel like I'm accomplishing something, but it's also about like enjoying it with the people I'm doing it with, right?
Totally. Yeah, I love that. I think when you were saying, I mean, just make their job as easy as possible, right? If there's something big, right, like a $100,000 thing came up that they didn't know about, yeah, I mean, you might have to do something about it. But the small things, like try to avoid like being annoying, right?
Yeah. 10, 20 grand, it's like, yeah, come on. Yeah. Working on a $10 million deal, 10, 20, get out of here. Like.
Exactly, exactly. Make it as easy as possible and don't waste their time too. I think that's something I learned is when I was first starting, I was just like trying to just go out and walk properties just to, for like, for the experience, right? Like I wanted to just get out and like, I wanted to walk this 100-unit building, see how it feels. The broker, like I only go walk a property if I know like we're serious about it, that we're going to be in the mix for buying this deal. Like the broker doesn't want to take an hour out of their day and, you know, have to deal with bothering tenants and like going through units. So only really don't waste their time too. Like that's a major killer too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Cause yeah, they only get paid on stuff they sell. So they need to be focusing their time on something that's going to get them to that commission. So yep. Great point. Well, let's talk about investor relations side. Like what are you doing to, so obviously that's a big part of the game. I don't know if you've raised recently on any deals, but it definitely is getting tougher than it was 12 months ago. So how do you guys structure that? What's kind of your strategy there?
Yeah, I think our last deal we did was right at the end of last year, end of 2022. And I think investors are starting, like I'm getting a lot of messages recently about some of our investors asking when the next deal is. So I think there's money's out there looking to be deployed right now. It's definitely a little bit more hesitant than it was a year ago. Everyone was just trying to pile in. I think right now people are being a little bit more conservative and just all the headlines, right? Like there's a lot of scare in the economy. I mean, I think you have to be super conservative right now on underwriting and the deals that you're doing. But yeah, I think there's still a lot of our existing investors that we've proven on the deals they're in so far, want to get in on more. That's been our biggest source right now is just current investors and referrals. I think we have like 80 investors in our current deals. So most of them are repeat investors. We've got a lot of other just referrals, which are the easiest ones, right? Because their buddy just messages them. We're like, hey, they're doing well on this deal. You should get on a call with them. And those are good ones. But yeah, we're doing our best too to just work on top of funnel and bringing more people in and being online and just attending different events and just trying to really expand out. Because as we get into bigger deals, right? Like find the deal and you got to find the money. Those are the two biggest activities that take place in a syndication.
Yeah, definitely. And I think your point on repeat investors, I think that's the biggest endorsement for any investment firm, right? It's the best review you can get. Like if they're going to continue to invest, that's huge. So hats off to you and your partners for sure. And the referral business, like the referral game, I mean, that's the best thing out there. Like, hey, do you have a buddy? If you know someone else want to do this, it's the easiest thing, right? Because one, you're getting another lead, but it's also a warm lead because if their friend's doing it, then there's already some assurance to them that this is a good thing. So I feel like anyone who is raising money always, and don't be afraid to ask too, like, hey, Mr. Investor, Mrs. Investor, we've done this. Is there anyone else who you think could get a benefit from doing this as well? I guarantee though, they start thinking and people love being connectors too. And they love being like, quote unquote, hero, right? Like, you know, they brought their buddy and now their buddy made a good return. Like, yeah, I did that for you. You know, like that's just who people are. That's nature, right? So I'm glad you brought that up.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, don't be afraid, you know, especially if you like just sold the property and gave them a great return or maybe like did something big and you sent out a great property update that something positive happened. You know, obviously you don't want to hit them at the wrong time, right? Like after something bad might have happened at the property and try to ask the referral, right? Like you want to do it when there's a positive tone and hopefully there's a positive tone the whole way through, but it is real estate. There's going to be negative things that happen that weren't expected throughout the whole.
Yeah. I like to call them on distribution day.
Yeah.
Hey, you like that? You like that deposit?
Exactly. Yeah, no. Exactly. Who doesn't like that?
Right. It's a good time. All right, man. Before we get to the final four questions, where can listeners find you?
Yeah, a few places. People are on Instagram. I've been trying to do a lot there, but that's just my first and last name at Brock Mogensen. DM me on there. I make sure to always respond to those. That's the best way to get in touch.
That's how we connected, man.
Yeah. Yep.
He does respond.
I've been trying, really working on that presence there. But then my website is smartassetcapital.com. That's where our company information is. And they also have some downloads and different stuff that talks about syndication. And that's at cresyndicator.io.
Awesome, man. All right. The final four. First one, why real estate as an investment vehicle? And what has it created or changed in your life today?
I love real estate because of the consistency, consistent cash flow. I love cash flow and I love the wealth creation it does, right? Getting equity and it builds up over time. Every month I'm getting cash flow. I'm adding to my net worth and you're really able to set up the systems to operate it. If you create the right systems, right? You don't have to be super involved in the day to day. You're still going to be involved in asset management and overseeing everything. But you set it up properly, compare it to stocks, right? Where it's like, I'm just kind of throwing money out there and hoping it works, not really even knowing what's going on in the back end. For me, real estate's a business. I can go out physically, I can touch it, right? It's tangible and all the benefits that come with it.
Yeah, it's great for control freaks. I can attest to that, man. It's great to be able to control something and know you're directing it to the finish line. Number two, what is a common mistake you see a lot of earlier investors make, and maybe even share a mistake that you've made in the past that you wouldn't want others to make as well?
I think not understanding the numbers, getting into it, especially if you're, you know, doing a duplex or four units, those pretty easy to wrap your arms around the numbers and the mistakes are not as many zeros. But what I see a lot is like people trying to get into this commercial space and maybe they have the deal flow, they have the money lined up, but they just don't understand how to properly underwrite a deal, be conservative in the underwriting, how much reserve should they be putting in, they're syndicating it, like how to structure it. I think that's the most important part, right? And it goes back to what I started with. I think no matter what field you take as being the expert in syndication, you need to understand the numbers. You need to understand how does everything tie into the return you're projecting.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's all about being realistic, right? And the way we look at it is we're trying to kill the deal. So if we can't kill the deal, then we probably have ourselves a deal here. Like where some people are trying to make a deal work, that's not what you want. Like don't get emotionally attached. There'll be another deal. I haven't had someone say that, but that's a great point. It's all about the numbers and knowing your numbers and obviously removing emotion from that. All right. Maybe this is the topic that you'll talk about. What's a great resource for people starting out that they should be looking at?
I think I'll bring it into like mindset. I'll do a book. One that really changed my mind, it's not real estate specific, but just mindset to think bigger. I really like 10X Rule by Grant Cardone. I think it's a popular book, obviously, but if you haven't read that one, it really opened up my mind. I love a lot of his stuff that has gotten me thinking bigger. So if you're looking for that kind of mindset momentum shift, that's a great book to check out.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like in anything we do in life, that's probably 90-95% of it, right, is mindset. The tactical stuff, we can learn that, but it's controlling how you think about things. Usually that's our biggest hurdle in life is ourselves. So great point. All right. Last question, the time machine. So if you had this time machine, you could go back in time, talk to younger Brock, kid that is probably not even thinking about any of this stuff yet. But like, what would be one piece of financial advice? Because like I mentioned to you, every Friday we do a personal finance show. So it's not what you make, but what you keep. So what would be one piece of financial advice you'd give your younger self?
I would go back and I would just start learning the money game earlier. Like, how does it all work, right? Like, once you understand like how wealth is created, passive income, tax benefits, like understanding that game, it changes like everything that you want to do in life. So I think going back, I would have started in high school, like consuming content, listening to podcasts and the books and just understanding how business works, how income works and all the different things that go into it that create wealth. Because by learning that, it would have maybe changed some things I did throughout college, right? The first job I got out of college, I might have probably done something different. I might have gone and worked for like a big private equity company, just learn that side of it. I'm happy with the journey I took and where I've gotten to, but I think if I were to go back and do it again, I would have just started the whole education process sooner. Because I think as soon as you have that base knowledge, you set yourself up to accomplish bigger things much quicker.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And when you're focused on anything, good things can happen. Man, well, I just want to thank you for coming on. Guys, he's in Miami. He's there for months. This is the life that this is creates for Brock and it can create for you too. So, and maybe that's not your dream, but most dreams like Brock and I were talking about it before we hit record require two things, money and time. So get after it. And then you can create the lives of your dream. All right, Brock, are there any parting words of wisdom you want to leave? Otherwise, we'll just close it out.
No, this was great. Yeah, I think we touched on a lot of topics and some important things that people need to look at that they're trying to really go big in this. So yeah, I mean, if anything else, anyone wants to reach out again, yeah, just hit me up and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate it. And everybody, as I always say, easy doesn't pay well and instant gratification is self-destructive. So not only get out there and work hard for your money, but have it work hard for you so you can create the lives of your dreams and we can all make this world a better place. All right, everybody, catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.